Hi, this is Sharon Papo. I'm going to read you my chapter called Looking for the Pony from the book Success Redefined. Put you in a pile of shit and you'll look for the pony, quipped my mother-in-law Patty after I shared the hidden gift of slowing down on a sick day. For as long as my wife's mother has known me, I have been the eternal optimist. I took this acknowledgement of holding a positive outlook as a high compliment because seeing the bright side didn't always come easy. It all goes back to kindergarten. While my classmates effortlessly handled their scissors, I struggled during craft time, the deceptively simple task of cutting shapes, easily mastered by my peers, morphed into my personal Everest. Despite my right-handed teacher's best intentions, her techniques felt like an untranslatable dialect that left me disheartened. In these tender early years, my left-handedness initially nudged me towards the false belief that I was innately flawed. "I just can't do it!" I screamed to my parents in a fit of frustration. That's when my right-handed parents offered me a much-needed paradigm shift. They told me that my left-handedness was not a deficit, but a distinctive trait that set me apart. They bought me left-handed scissors and gave me a different perspective that celebrated rather than lamented my deviation from the norm. Left-handed scissors, $2 at Target. Perspective shift, priceless. As I navigated my elementary school years, I was low in the social pecking order. I had few friends, and my inner voice began to morph from a whisper of self-doubt into a roar of self-criticism. At night, I found myself replaying my day's failures on the silver screen of my mind. Every recollection of a mistake or a cruel peer comment filled me with shame. Rehashing my darkest moments intensified my insecurities, leading to many tear-filled, sleepless nights. As my negative beliefs intensified, compounded by the death of my beloved grandmother, my Omi, I became trapped in my own mental quicksand. I started entertaining suicidal thoughts. I recall a moment standing in my kitchen where I thought about hurting myself with our sharpest knife. At age 8, I was sent to weekly therapy and started taking antidepressants. One of the people I confided in during my formative years was my cello teacher, Mrs. McBurney. Before my lesson began, she listened to me with a patient ear and an open heart. After I poured out my tribulations, she offered words of empathy and then redirected my attention by inquiring, "Now, tell me what went right this week." That gentle request conveyed a profound wisdom that helped to shift my thoughts, focus, and energy. This improved my mood and got me present for our lesson. Beyond the cello's melodies, Mrs. McBurney taught me a poignant life lesson, which I carried with me through my high school years and beyond. When we look for the good, we find it. My self-esteem grew along with my positive outlook, and I was able to get off the antidepressants by the age of 13. After college, I was hired as a health educator for incarcerated and homeless youth. Empowering these resilient teens amidst their considerable challenges was deeply rewarding. I poured my heart into my work, received outstanding evaluations, and exceeded our program goals. I fondly recall the heavily tattooed teenage boy who sheepishly approached me to share that he was ready to make more positive choices based on the 6-week class I had taught. It was a shocking blow when the successful program was terminated a few days later due to lack of funding. My initial response was a mix of sadness and anxiety. Sadness for the teens losing this crucial resource, and anxiety for my financial stability. I found myself mulling over every possible difficulty and lying awake at night watching the greatest hits of my fears on my mind TV. After a week-long pity party, My wise father imparted a significant life lesson to me. We hold the power to assign meaning to each event in our lives. The choice was mine, to mourn an outcome that lay beyond my control or shape a more empowering narrative. In that moment, I intentionally chose to trust in my resilience. I started to reframe this unexpected turn as a catalyst propelling me towards my next professional adventure in service of the greater good. I strategically positioned a reminder of this affirming message on my computer, refrigerator, and bathroom mirror. Once I chose a more hopeful perspective, I found meaningful work again. I developed a new program called Puente, Building Bridges Between Jews and Latinos. It was a program for college students to explore each other's culture, learn about discrimination and bias, and participate in service learning projects together. The participant evaluations were positive, and all grant goals were met. Once again, I was dumbstruck when the program's grant funding was not renewed. After being laid off a second time, I again spiraled into self-doubt and despair. But this time, I managed to start rebounding after a few days. I started to journal and talk to my mentors and friends. I remembered that while the layoffs and program closures were unchangeable facts, I was a choice about feeling like a victim. With a feeling like the universe was prompting me towards something bigger, I vowed to learn how to raise money so that wonderful organizations like the ones I'd worked at could maintain and grow their funding and continue to serve the community in more meaningful ways. To move my career forward, I applied and was accepted to UC Berkeley's School of Social Welfare Master's Program. While I waited for my graduate program to begin, I was hired as a program coordinator as a respected Jewish youth leadership program. One of our retreats focused on the various aspects of diversity in our Jewish community. One program panel included a gay Jewish speaker who shared his heartfelt message of authenticity and acceptance. While the retreat was appreciated by the team participants, the backlash was immediate and fierce when an irate parent started to organize to destroy our program. My supervisor pacified them by promising to cancel the diversity panel for future cohorts. I had already started dating my future wife, but this ordeal reinforced my fears of rejection if I were to reveal that part of my identity. I was confronted with a seemingly impossible choice, my authenticity or my professional and communal standing. I dreamed of a future where I would work in or even help build a truly inclusive workplace. Despite the rejection from the conservative Jewish community that I grew up in, I felt called to be on a path towards positive change. Feeling inspired to make a difference, I completed graduate school, dove into life and executive coach training, found stellar mentors, and took numerous intensive fundraising courses so I would never lose another position or valued program to funding issues. After graduate school, I was hired as the co-director of Third Street Youth Center and Clinic, an innovative multi-service adolescent health center in Bayview Hunters Point, an underserved neighborhood in San Francisco. Funding was tight and our space was tighter. Our vision quickly outgrew our small clinic, and we knew that to truly serve the community, we would need a bigger space. I activated the fundraising knowledge I had learned and secured additional funds, doubling our annual fundraising. When a rare opportunity arose for us to move to a larger building, I launched a successful capital campaign that helped to provide long-term stability for this important organization. At the ribbon-cutting ceremony, I reflected back on the path to that moment. Losing jobs over funding issues early in my career turned out to be the best thing that could have happened for me and for Third Street Youth Center and Clinic. I was proud of what we had built, and after 5 years, I was ready for a new challenge. I became the executive director of the Diversity Center, an LGBTQ+ community center. The critical nature of our work was clear. I will never forget the day that Chris reluctantly walked the word door. Chris shared that we were the first people she had ever come out to. She was so afraid she would lose her job and be rejected by her family and her church that she had decided to die by suicide that day. She was literally on her way to the woods with a gun in her trunk to take her own life. Chris happened to take a wrong turn onto our street and saw a rainbow flag out front. Chris took it as a sign and entered our building for the first time. We surrounded Chris with support, crisis resources, a therapist, and camaraderie. Chris insists her life today is due to that unforeseen detour. We knew our community needed our organization strong. Once again, I put my fundraising skills into action. I worked with a team of staff and volunteers to quadruple the annual fundraising and execute a successful capital campaign, which provided financial stability and established a forever home. The work was fulfilling, and when I left after 8 years, I was deeply honored that January 12, 2021 was named Sharon Papo Day in the city of Santa Cruz in recognition of intersectional movement building and advocacy for the LGBTQ plus community. After 12 years as an executive director, I was ready for what was next. I thought I would work for an international company. I networked and applied and applied and applied and received zero job offers. Each rejection hurt when that little voice in my head told me, "You're not good enough." I intentionally talked back to that voice and reminded myself that good things lay ahead, even if I couldn't see it today. I realized I needed to reconsider my professional direction. I had clarity that I stand for joy and wholeness for myself and others, and there are many ways that I can contribute to the world. With a friend's encouragement, I conducted 50 informational interviews. During my 50th conversation, I was encouraged to apply to be a capital campaign fundraising consultant. I applied, got hired, and realized that I really enjoyed the work. I got to show up as a strategist, cheerleader, and help people address their own toxic blocks around money while they ran transformational fundraising campaigns. This experience inspired me to launch Indigo Skies Consulting, my boutique firm specializing in executive coaching and fundraising consulting. This work was fulfilling, and I also felt I had more to do for the LGBTQ plus community. I co-founded a second company, LGBTQ eLearning, with Dr. Cornell Verdeja Woodson, where we co-created an engaging self-paced e-learning course called Building LGBTQ plus Inclusive Workplaces. The rejections from those previous jobs guided me on my current path, where I get to be of even greater service to more people and worthy causes while having a better work-life balance. It's an honor to be able to guide and empower individuals to grow into transformative, effective, and inclusive leaders. Reflecting on my journey, my current successful and fulfilling path would not have materialized without the invaluable and hard lessons learned during my early days. Enduring the weight of losing jobs and witnessing worthy programs dissolve due to insufficient funding twice compelled me to delve deeply into the realm of fundraising to help community-based organizations have the resources they need to make the impact they are committed to. Enduring the attack after the diversity panel inspired me to co-found the company LGBTQ eLearning to help companies have the skills to create inclusive workplaces. These transformative experiences paved the way for my current trajectory, but I would not have gotten here without the heavy lifting I did around my mindset. Ultimately, we can choose if our minds are a source of empowerment or self-sabotage. We each have the power to improve our life outlook. It's not easy, but with practice and determination, it's absolutely possible. Our brains process 70,000 thoughts per day. We don't have to believe all of them. We don't have to be victims of our thoughts. If you want to change your thoughts, the first thing to do is to notice which thoughts are causing you pain. Once you're aware of the negative thought, you can ask yourself, is this thought even true? Would I say this to my friend? Is this thought serving me? A gratitude practice became one of the easiest and most powerful ways for me to improve my thoughts. Taking time each day to intentionally focus on what I appreciate and what's working in my life brings my attention to the positive aspects. Writing a daily thank you note has been one of my favorite ways of taking time to be grateful and making someone else's day too. If this all sounds Pollyannish to you, I will share that I don't believe that everything happens for a reason. There are a lot of horrifying things in our world, and I can't and won't believe that these incredible hardships are divinely meant to be. A positive and hopeful frame of mind doesn't alter the harsh realities of poverty, illness, climate disasters, xenophobia, broken hearts, and so much more. But it helps us confront the hardships and resiliently navigate through them. I have learned to embrace a positive mindset. It's an intentional choice every day. If I can do it, I know in every cell of my body that you can too. Just like learning to play a musical instrument or developing any specific skill set, it takes commitment and practice, but it's worth it. At some point, we will all find ourselves in a metaphorical pile of shit. When you find yourself there, I hope you choose to look for the lesson, the growth, the metaphorical pony. It will always bring you more joy than focusing on the flies and the muck. We each have only one unique and precious life. How do you want to experience yours?